Hearing some of the stories of Congressman Lewis Stokes from not so long ago was a real eye-opener. Those of us too young to have lived through or remember some of the defining events in our society's recent past just can't grasp what it must have been like. In this interview, we tap into the wisdom and experience of Congressman Stokes' long and distinguished career, including some stories about his brother Carl and some advice for Cleveland and for young people. Congressman Stokes says that a leader like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. comes around once in a century. I'd add Lewis and Carl Stokes to that select group that may come around every few generations.
Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show.
When you were practicing law, you were involved with the landmark Terry versus State of Ohio case. How did that come about?
Well, he called me. I knew John. I represented some of the people that John Terry hung around with. He got in this trouble. He called me and asked me if I'd come down and represent him.
And what does the case deal with?
It is on the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. And the issue was search and seizure, and the question of whether a police officer can stop and frisk a pedestrian on the street in the absence of, quote, probable cause, close quotes. Once we got into this case, we learned there were two other cases in the country on the same subject, and they came up, the Supreme Court merged those two cases onto the docket with my case, but we were the lead case. What I was raising at that time is very similar to what they're saying now about racial profiling. My case was the first case the Supreme Court had ever looked into this question of the criteria for being able to stop somebody on the street and frisk them where no crime has been committed. This case is now taught in every law school in the United States, and is also taught in every police department in America.
You and your brother Carl were born in the projects of Cleveland, didn't have a lot of money. Your father passed away when you were very young. You had to be raised by your mother, and you were African American kids in a tough time in history. How do you explain the great successes that the two of you achieved?
I don't know. I suppose if we were to try to discovered the root cause for whatever Carl and I became, it would have to be the inspiration and discipline, teachings, loving comfort and care that we received from our mother and other members of our family, including her mother and her brother. They raised us, and she along with them were the ones that gave us a moral compass, and I suppose taught us that we ought to have some purpose in life. We ought to help those who are less fortunate in our lives, and above all, to be somebody. That was her constant drum to us, was get something in your head and get an education so you won't have to work with your hands like I've had to work with mine. She preached that to us over and over and over.
There are so many wings and buildings and programs that have been named after you and your brother. How's that feel?
Well, I just finished talking to a group of interns, some interns here at this law firm. And they had a luncheon for them over at the Lewis Stokes Annex, the Cleveland Public Library. I told them what an honor it was be in a building that had been named after me. And I told them that it's almost unreal to me, as it was to my brother, that the work we had done had generated the kind of appreciation in people that people wanted to name things after us. We never sought it. We never asked anybody to name anything after us. We certainly didn't have the money to buy our name on anything. And So just the fact that we gave the kind of service that warranted people wanting to show their appreciation to us by naming buildings and streets and other programs and things of the sort is just an honor that's, to us, indescribable. It's a great honor.
I have some friends who, black friends who are about your age who were in service about the same time, and they tell me some pretty tough stories. It wasn't easy. We know about the Tuskegee Airmen and all, but there were a lot of black African-American soldiers who were fighting for the country but didn't really have the rights. Did that make you bitter or upset, or what was your reaction to the poorer treatment in the armed services?
Well, both my brother Carl and I drafted into World War II. Both of us were probably 18 years old when we went into service. We came from Cleveland, where we'd been born and raised, so we had never been under conditions where we were required to eat, work, play, and live under segregated conditions. It was deplorable to wear the uniform of this country and be required, as I was, in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, to get on the back of the bus and ride in the uniform of this country simply because I was black. But, you know, I endured 3 years of it. I came out, and there are many, many, you know, instances of vicious racism that I endured during that period of time, and many, many stories about it. But when I came out, the good thing was I was able to take advantage of the GI Bill of Rights and be able to get a college education at the expense of the federal government, be able to acquire a legal degree and from Cleveland Marshall College of Law and become a lawyer. And so while it was, you know, one of the most unpleasant experiences of my life, there's no reason for me to be bitter about it. That was the nature of the beast, so to speak. During that period of time, that's where this country was. And unfortunately, we've come a long way from where the United States of America was at that time.
Do you think the young people today, you know, it wasn't that long ago, do you think they can just grasp how different things are now? Not that there's not a long way to go, but it's come a long way.
I don't think they can grasp it. They never saw the things that I just talked about. They never saw black people being required to sit on the back of a bus because of the color of their skin. They never saw anyone having to put your dime in the front of the bus if it was crowded with whites standing in the aisle, and you're required to get back off the bus after you pay your money, walk around to the back of the bus, and enter the back door. They never saw drinking fountains that were marked for white only or for black only. These are the kinds of things all you can do is tell young people about it or let them read about it, but they can't relate to it. They've never seen these kinds of things. This doesn't exist in the America in which they've grown up.
Now, you and your brother, they can refer back to you two and Dr. King, of course, and other leaders that it might seem like a long time ago to them. Are there any leaders now that you see who are going to take that mantle and continue that work?
Well, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. only comes along once in a century. You don't have but one leader of that scope. But as I look at the black community today, there are many leaders, not only in the area of civil rights, but in the area of economics and science and math and medicine and dentistry, nursing, in all the disciplines. And the black community is no different from the white community. There's no single white leader. And the same applies to the black community, no single black community. And you really just have to look at the community and see what other leadership there is. And, you know, I see a lot of leadership in the black community.
there had to be some time when you looked at your brother, maybe when he became mayor or you became a congressman, and you just kind of thought, here's two brothers from the projects of Cleveland, and now, you know, one of us is the first black mayor of a major American city, and another is a United States congressman, and all, and you just kind of had a grin to each other. So how, what was that like in the personal part of that?
I don't know we ever really talked about it. I think we both recognized that we were leaders, that we had achieved, that we were devoted to the same kinds of service to the community. But I don't think we talked about it beyond that. I don't think we really understood exactly why we did all this, except that we'd have to give attribution to our mother. And beyond that, we never discussed it.
If you had a magic wand or something, what would you do for Cleveland now? Any advice for Cleveland, you know, the situation we're in?
Well, Cleveland is not unique. And many other cities are undergoing the same or similar type of transformation that we see here in Cleveland, and indeed in all of Ohio. Or if you look over at Michigan, you know, the state of Michigan economically is a basket case today. And Detroit, of course, a major city, is suffering probably worse than we are. So this is what cities are undergoing today. I have faith that they'll pull out of it, that when the business community and the political community come together and work together, they can make cities work.
Is regionalism part of that, making it work?
Oh, you have to look at regionalism. Today, considering the number of suburban communities that we have, and with the realization that the large cities are the base or the hub of those suburbs, then you have to really look at whether or not there are areas or avenues in which you can conserve resources by regionalizing. Now, that's not to say that you can do that with all phases of it, but certainly you should take a look at education and see how can we provide the kind of education to every child in our city and in our suburbs that will enable them to be able to competitively compete against students all over the world. You know, what do we need to do to make all students competitive? So certainly you have to look at regionalism to see to what degree we can...
Is there a favorite memory of growing up in your family? You know, that's something you always did, or something that stands out as a great time?
Well, I think Christmas was very important to my mother and Carl and I. For most of the time we were growing up, she had to work on the job during the week, which meant she would leave on a Monday morning and come back Friday evening. And our grandmother would take care of us in that interim period every week. And we loved our grandmother, and she was very special to us. But the time in the year that my mother always set aside for Carl and I to make up for all the other holidays and times she could not be with us was on Christmas. She always held Christmas for us. And while we didn't have much money, and she wasn't able to do a lot of things for us, that day was, Carl and I knew, was our special day with our mother. And she shared with us whatever she was able to share with us, and that remains in my memory as something very special.
What would you tell young kids today?
I'd tell them to learn everything that they can learn in their school classes, that they may never have to use all of it, but the beauty is in the fact that if they have learned everything and the occasion ever arises when they need it, just like a computer, they'll be able to go in there and pull it out. And if they haven't put it there, then they can't pull it out. And so not to worry about putting too much into their cranium, that their brain can hold everything they put there. I would tell them that they are the brightest young people in the world today. They are brighter than Carl Stokes. They're brighter than Lewis Stokes. And that says to me that with the opportunities today, with the barriers that have been shut down, that in this day and age, they have every opportunity, if they apply themselves, to be whatever they want to be.
You're 82 years old now. You've had a long and successful career, law, Congress, politics, and now you're back at a law firm and teaching and all. What motivates you that keeps you out of retirement?
Well, it's just that I felt after a career of 14 years of being an active trial lawyer, 30 years as a United States congressman, that I've been able to acquire some experience and some wisdom that I feel is important for me to impart to young people, and to the degree that I can interact with them and be able to advise and counsel with them, that this is what I want to do at this stage of my life. And it is very comforting to me. As you know, I'm on the faculty at Case Western Reserve University, where I teach at the Mandel School of Applied Social Sciences. And one of the most inspirational experiences that I've ever had in my life is to stand in a classroom and speak to these bright young people. In the case of our faculty, these are young people who are pursuing master and PhD degrees. It's refreshing to me to stand in a courtroom and try to answer their questions, to be able to satisfy their curiosity about politics and politicians in our country. These are all things that make life very important to me, and that's why I cannot at this point in time resign myself to sitting down in front of a TV set all day, falling asleep right after my dinner.
What would you like people to know about you that they might not know?
I don't know what that would be, frankly. Just that I am fortunate to have had a wonderful wife to whom I have now been married 47 years, and without whom I would never have been able to accomplish any of the things that I have accomplished. And along with her, I'm blessed to have four wonderful children who made many sacrifices of my time in order for me to be out helping other people's children and families. And this is why I guess the time that my wife spent with them, raising them while I was out doing all these things in the community, has made them such successful children I have. And then we're blessed over and above that with seven grandchildren, three boys and four girls. Two of our grandsons have recently graduated from college, now make them third generation of college educated children. That is a side of me, and love of my family, and what they did for me is a side of me that I want people to know.
You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.